Welcome to The Intuitive Customer, where we discuss how you can improve your customer experience and your bottom line. And now, here are your hosts, award-winning influencer and pioneering author of 7 books, Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton from Emory University.
The point was that it was, they'd recognized the things that I had been buying and were offering me a discount for those. And then they'd said, here's your personalized offer, which again, I thought, bloody hell, that's quite good. That makes me feel a little more special.
Low effort personalization can be kind of a turnoff. Like if you send me an email that's clearly the same email you sent to everyone and just have dropped my name into it, that's not showing me respect. That's not showing that you actually put effort forth. Whereas if you do create something that is unique to me or that is something that I value, that shows more of that respect. Makes me feel special.
I really don't want someone to be gathering information on me that hasn't been upfront enough to explain to me why they're going to use it. Ryan, you know I like fishing.
Yes.
Particularly like fishing when I'm in Florida.
Because I can
imagine. It's a lot warmer over there.
Sure.
than it is in England. But that's got nothing to do with that, actually, because I wanted to start off by telling you a story, which I hope sort of outlines the topic of today's conversation, which is around privacy and personalization. Okay. So there's a fishing tackle shop I go to in Florida. So I live in Sarasota, and there's actually a town called Bradenton that's not very far away, and there's a fishing tackle shop called Discount Tackle, okay? Despite the name of the shop, I can actually buy the fishing tackle cheaper somewhere else, okay? Which I find quite amusing. But one of the reasons, or in fact, not one of the reasons, probably the only reason I go there is because they know me. Mm. So when I walk in, and this happened to me 2 or 3 weeks ago, I walk in and Scott, the manager, goes, "Hi, Colin, how you doing?" And then we have a chat. He goes, "All right, yeah. So why don't you use this lure today? You know, this has been really working for me." And I buy all my fishing gear there. Yeah. And the interesting bit is I know I could buy it cheaper somewhere else, yeah? But I guess the point I'm trying to make is the importance of personalization,
yeah.
Okay? And the interesting thing for me is that clearly personalization is a key sort of business tenet, but it's rubbing up against this privacy issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I like the way that you framed these as being in tension, because they often are. I'll draw a distinction here, and I don't know if you want to put this off and we can talk about it later, but the problem with personalization in a lot of modern business contexts is it's not what you just described with your interaction with Scott. That's kind of the ideal, where you have a one-on-one or an interpersonal relationship with other people who know you and appreciate, right? You're a regular at this bar, or you've got a long-term relationship with the service provider and they know you and they understand what your needs are. In many business contexts, that's understandably not realistic or achievable. And so instead, what we try to do in business is kind of fake that relationship by aggregating data about you and then serving it up to you. And again, I'm not going to say that that's bad or wrong, but I think that that's where it starts to require trade-offs. None of the risks we're going to talk about today with regard to privacy or anything that you are experiencing with Scott at the Discount Tackle shop, right? Like that's not an issue. It's when we start to get technology into this and we start to create an almost artificial sense of an interpersonal relationship, that's when we need to start worrying about some of this stuff.
As I've been thinking about this over the last few weeks, and I read a really good post from a guy called Graham Hill. I'll put a link in the show notes. Graham's a guy I respect on LinkedIn, and he normally comes up with some good stuff, and he has done so in personalization, and he's got a load of resources there that you can look at as well. So as I've been thinking about it, it's made me think that it's all to do with value and purpose. Let me give you an example. So the example I would give is that I use Spotify all the time. I play music all the time, okay? And I love it when at the end of the year, they come up with this Wrapped.
Yeah.
Spotify Wrapped that tells me that I'm in the top 2% of people that listen to Pink Floyd, one of my favorite bands.
So for those who don't use Spotify or aren't familiar with Wrapped, Wrapped is something they do at the end of every year that essentially reveals your listening behavior back to you. So they tell you what you listen to most often, how you relate to other people who listen to similar things. They've started creating like cute persona names for you, like maybe you're a vampire if you listen a lot late at night or that kind of thing. It's fun. I agree.
It's great because I find it really interesting. And this year when it came out, all my family were pinging stuff around to each other going, hey, look, I'm one of the top listeners to Passenger and, you know, blah, 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 whatever it may be. And the other thing that Spotify do, I don't know if you've played with this yet. Have you used the DJ mode?
I haven't.
Oh, right. It's really good.
Is it a recommendation engine?
Well, it's actually a DJ. So what it does, so it's AI, okay? And what it does is it comes on and goes, hey, hi, Colin, this morning we're going to be playing some songs that you really seem to enjoy about 3 months ago. And I've thrown some other ones in there. And then in between the songs, they come, you know, the voice comes back in and tells you either some interesting stats or, you know what, we're going to liven it up now and we're going to take you to a song you haven't heard before. And it really is good, actually. And I've been using it a lot. The key point is I value that.
Yeah.
Okay. As opposed to I get on Facebook and I worry that the data that has been presented is just being used to throw adverts at me, or the data that is then being collected by whichever source it may be is being used for, I won't say nefarious, but for reasons that are not trying to benefit me, trying to benefit the company. And I know that Facebook, other social media platforms, that, you know, if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. So, you know, you're paying for it one way or the other with your data or whatever it may be. But I want to see that being used for value for me. And I don't mind the company getting value out of it because clearly Spotify, sorry, this is a bit of a rant, isn't it? Because clearly Spotify are doing it because they want to keep me as a subscriber. So constantly freshening things up. So I know that they're not just doing it just because they're being generous, but it feels like it's something for me.
It feels fundamentally different than getting served up a personalized ad. Even if personalized ads are more effective, and I expect that they are, it still feels a little bit, you know, exploitative is a strong word. That's probably not accurate. But it is pretty clear that it's for the benefit of a company rather than, you know, for my own experience that I'm getting served up these ads.
Let me do a little experiment that Graham, the guy I met, or the guy I spoke about earlier, put in his blog post. Because you said, I personalize ad. Just, Graham said, go and have a look in your email. Look in your spam email and look at the personalization that you have in your spam email. And other than your bloody name, there's hardly any. The point I'm trying to make is I don't think even the adverts are personalized. Okay. So let me give you another example. So you know that I have a Jeep in Sarasota. So I've joined this accessories website club it's not a club, I don't pay a subscription, but I've got an account with this company that do Jeep accessories. And part of that is that I've told them the model number of my Jeep, because obviously a Jeep from 20 years ago is different to a Jeep that's just come out. And therefore, when you're adding on an accessory, it has to be different. I got an email from them the other day, and it said, if you've got a Jeep between 07 and 24, then this works. And I thought, why say that? Why, you know the bloody year date of my Jeep. Why are you not telling me that this fits on my Jeep? They even know the color of my Jeep. Why are you not even showing me what it would look like on my Jeep? Because that would increase sales. And it made me think that it just goes back to organizations, and I may be exaggerating here, being too lazy.
Yeah.
It's too difficult to do that. There's clearly going to be a cost involved in everything else. And or it goes back to segmentation, where they don't know the segments. But why would you not turn around and say, this would work well on your Jeep, Colin? You know, your whatever it is.
You're right in that I'm sure that they thought, oh, well, it would be too much money, time, and effort to kind of customize each of these emails. That's increasingly not a good excuse, because this stuff is getting so much cheaper, faster, and easier to do. It's not like you're having to write out each of these emails by hand. And like the biggest problem with email marketing is just fatigue. You know, you're sending people out these messages and it becomes background noise. And so if they are not like relevant, that's just going to increase the likelihood that they're going to ignore the next email that you send them. So it's not a good excuse.
And you think, hold on. So all they've got to do is go, a model from 2020. Let's put together an email for all the models that have been manufactured in 2020 or 2021 or whatever it was. So again, I don't see it as being rocket science. But the other interesting example that I actually came up today, which I thought was actually quite good, is I'm in England at the moment. And when we're in England, we get our grocery shopping delivered. Okay. So we go onto an app for a company called Sainsbury's over here, which are a bit like, I would put them like a Target over in the States. Yeah. So we go online and we put the order in and then it's delivered. Interesting today, it came up and said, here are your personalized offers. Okay. So they've clearly been collecting data on what we've been ordering. Okay. And they have a reward scheme, a thing called Nectar, which they use. I have to say, all the offers were of products that we would normally buy. Mm. And therefore, I don't know if they are personalized to me only. In other words, nobody else has got that offer. And I doubt that's the case. But it's not the point, really. The point was that they'd recognize the things that I had been buying.
Personal
and relevant. Were offering me a discount for those. And then they'd said, here's your personalized offer, which again, I thought, bloody hell, that's quite good. That makes me feel a little more special.
No, I agree. So this is a nascent theory that I'm developing as we're talking. So it's probably not very good. But as I'm trying to like figure out like when have I appreciated personalization versus when have I found it creepy or off-putting or distracting, feel free to disagree if this does not apply to you. But it seems like stuff that is new or rooted in the technology that wouldn't have been like possible or practical to do before, I tend to be more open to and respond more positively to, as opposed to stuff that feels like it's trying to mimic the relationship that you have with Scott in a cheap way. That feels insincere to me and I have a negative reaction to it. So if a company sent me an email that said, hey, Ryan, here's this thing, and then like dropped in some bit of information that they knew about me somehow, like that Scott might bring up to you, like, hey, and know that you love like this type of thing. So here's this thing that we got going on. That would feel very insincere to me. Or like if I'm checking into a hotel and somebody's able to like pull up my past data and like make small talk about, oh, I see you were at our location in Denver last year. How'd you like that? That would feel creepy to me. If it's a thing that if it came from a friend, it would be like, great, like you remember me, like we have this conversation. Whereas when we're mimicking that through technology, that feels a little off-putting.
Ryan, I've always said that anybody can turn around and say they have a great show. But the issue for me is when somebody else tells you that your show is the best.
In that vein, we are pleased to announce that Feedspot.com has recently named us one of the top 10 podcasts on the web for customer marketing and CX. And we are very grateful.
So if you would like to help a colleague, if you'd like to help one of your friends or even someone you dislike, please tell them to listen to The Intuitive Customer. And that helps us spread the word. Thanks very much. Some of that depends upon the context, doesn't it?
Sure.
So the example of you going into a hotel and them saying, oh, I saw you saw the review, it sort of feels like that's out of context for them to say that. The other thing it makes me wonder is whether it's then, and undoubtedly this would be the case thinking about it, it's affected by the brand.
Sure.
So in other words, I don't like Facebook. The negative stuff that they've had over the years about what they do with the data and everything else, that makes me go, no, I don't like that. But the interesting thing is, why is that different to me than Spotify?
I think brand trust is a really important kind of moderator on that. If you don't trust somebody, then the fact that they're personalizing is just evidence to you that they have your data. And it's a reminder in the context of you not trusting them. Whereas if you do trust the brand, then personalization can be kind of more accepted as being a benefit.
Yeah. And that's where I go back to saying about the purpose. So what's the purpose? If the purpose is that they are collecting data so they can stick more adverts in front of me, et cetera, and they don't necessarily benefit me, then that's one thing. Because I'm now going to argue against myself. I could argue that Facebook does personalize my experience because it looks at what I look at, and then it obviously reflects that back on me. Because as we know, the more you look at a particular topic, the more it will present it to you.
Yeah. I mean, it curates your feed.
Is there any sort of psychological thoughts around why? The interesting question for me is always, why do we want personalization? And I guess part of that is around, and maybe this is some of it actually, part of that is around feeling familiar. Mm-hmm. So when I go in to see Scott or I go into the fish and tackle shop, I feel, and I've said this to you before actually about Apple, I feel I'm going into a club.
Yeah.
So when I go into an Apple shop, I feel that it's more of a club than going into a store. And I wonder if it's then that familiarity. And I guess the interesting bit I was just getting to, whether it's we allow certain people to be familiar with us. So I wonder whether that's an interesting thought.
Oh, I'm sure that's part of it. Yeah. Like personalization, we recognize as effort extended in our behalf, you know, especially if we think that it's positive personalization, but like this is the company kind of showing us respect, signaling that they've put some effort into this or that they value it, which is, again, I think part of why low effort personalization can be kind of a turnoff. Like if you send me an email that's clearly the same email you sent to everyone and just have dropped my name into it, that's not showing me respect. That's not showing that you actually have put effort forth. Whereas if, you know, you do create something that is unique to me or that is something that I value, that kind of shows more of that respect. Makes me feel special. Makes me feel like I'm unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
We did a podcast a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, where we talked about ghosting. And we talked about the whole bit about from the customer side, and we'll put a link in the show notes. But one of the things that we were talking about was the amount of messages that you get on LinkedIn now. I've had them this morning where you get on and they start talking about, well, who's doing your accounts for you? And can I sell you this IT system? The point I'm trying to get to is that if someone is saying, how did Luton Town get on at the weekend? Or I saw they, you know, they won 2-0. That was, you know, whatever. That little bit of effort makes it that feel that personalization much more differently, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a signal that the person cares in some way that a generic message wouldn't.
And I guess the other part is that you're trying to build, like the Scott example again, is you're trying to build that emotional connection, aren't you? Which I think is important. The interesting thing is that we were talking about this earlier. It was making me think that I wonder whether the Scott example, he has the information about me, but it's not stored in anywhere else other than his head.
Yeah.
So why is it that I worry then that another company has got that information that's stored in their computer? What's the difference?
Oh, well, the difference is that computers are hacked into all the time and that data is literally stolen.
And Scott's head isn't.
Scott's head isn't. Although, you know, I mean, somebody could to take him down to the pub and buy him enough drinks that he might be willing to spill all of your phishing secrets to anyone who listens. But yeah, no, it's the reason we're nervous about data privacy is because data is routinely stolen and hacked and used for nefarious purposes. So I don't think
there's something, isn't there something more as well about that though? So one of the things that I use DuckDuckGo. Have you heard of DuckDuckGo?
Yeah.
So DuckDuckGo is, for those of you that haven't, is a window browser and a search engine that is more, let me say, more secure, because I do worry about what's happening with my personal data. But it's more than just being hacked, to be honest with you. So part of it is about being hacked. Part of it is about, it is that respect, actually, thinking about it. It's just that bit about going, I really don't want someone to be gathering information on me that hasn't been upfront enough to explain to me and why they're going to use it. And also hasn't displayed to me anything that is of my to my advantage. And what I mean by that is Spotify have gone, they haven't actually gone, we've clearly collected all this data. I know they're collecting all that data, but here's something that's of value to you, Colin. You know, we think it's going to be of value to you. Whereas other organizations are just collecting it and then sticking adverts of things that they're trying to flog me. So it is that respect bit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you can feel your privacy's been violated even if people don't misuse your data. You know, I mean, I had to look up a hotel yesterday. I had to look up a hotel yesterday to go to a conference in a couple of months. This morning on my phone on a completely different platform, I got an ad from that hotel. And that felt creepy. That felt like a violation. I don't believe that anything nefarious is going to happen with that search data or that I'm being linked to that hotel. It still felt invasive.
Sure. The interesting one for me, mate, is that when I get the Spotify and the grandkids a bit round, and then I get recommendations for different versions of Wheels on the Bus.
Yes.
And the stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I will say that there are also occasionally positive outcomes from that. I remember there was one time when I was on some website and I was served an ad for a collectible sword, like a big sword that you would hang on your wall. And I don't know what in my life I was doing that the search engines decided you're the type of person that would buy a sword, but I've never been more flattered in my life. Like that was. So there are occasional good outcomes from this.
Yeah, you never know. What's the so what? What does this mean for people listening to this? What should they go away and do?
Well, like I said, I think the biggest one is just the fact that you encouraged us to talk about this today as a trade-off. So we can talk about personalization as just a consumer good. Like, of course, everybody likes to have things personalized to them. It's going to increase relationships with your brand and increase sales and all that kind of stuff. I think that it's much more context dependent. It depends on who we're talking about, which segment it's talking about. We're talking about how the personalization is operationalized, to what ends, for what purposes. All of these things matter. And they need to be balanced against other concerns like customers' desire for privacy. I'll add one more concern that I personally have about the trend toward personalization and kind of micro-targeting and that kind of stuff, which I haven't seen discussed a lot. But one of the purposes of a brand is as a communications device. So when I see you using an Apple product, you know, you choose Apple, at least in for some part, in order to signal to other people that you are an Apple type of a person and to signal to yourself that you are. And I worry a little bit that as things get increasingly personalized in terms of experience, that my experience with a brand and your experience with the same brand might be totally different because you and I have had different personalized experiences. And I worry a little bit that, that over time that could erode the value of some brands. So if I'm trying to signal to you that through this brand that I'm this type of person, that brand means something totally different to you, does the brand then have that signal value anymore? And that means paradoxically that I have less reason to stick with your brand because it doesn't mean anything to anybody else that I want to communicate.
I mean, I can imagine at some point in the very distant future that you're going to get individual personalized experience for every individual person. But I would imagine that there's going to be just the scale of it. There's going to be enough people to all group together. It then becomes, so in other words, I don't think it'll ever go down to just one. And that then would have to be like core, well, there are core brand values, but how that manifests itself, wouldn't there?
Yeah, it depends on the extent to which we allow that personalization. You know, a brand that's engaged in advertising to a large extent is able to kind of create those core values that it can then like personalize around. But if a brand starts off by personalizing to customers, it could be that it never reaches to the point where people agree on a shared meaning.
Listen, mate, we're a hell of a long way from that point at the moment. They can just about spell my name right in the personalization on my emails. So.
This is a more long-term concern that I have.
The only bit of advice I would give people is this. I think you've got to think about the purpose of it. I go back to it. For me, when you're creating a personalized experience, you're trying to do that to improve the experience and therefore sell more, okay? Rather than I'm collecting all this data to sell more. And therefore, I think that's an important distinction between the two. So you've got to provide some value is yes. The issue. You've got to, in that collection of that data, you've got to provide some value that the customer appreciates. Collecting data just to increase your bottom line is not respectful and I don't think will drive people to come and use you lots more.
So here's a metaphor nobody asked for. In contract law, apparently, if you write up a contract so that one party receives no benefit. So like if I force an employment contract on you that says that, well, maybe employment's the wrong context, but if I force a contract on you that says you're not allowed to do any of this stuff,
yeah.
But then I offer you no benefit for you not being able to do it. I don't offer to pay you anything. I don't secure any rights for you. As I understand it, not being a lawyer, that contract tends to be not valid, right? You can't enter a completely one-sided contract. And I think that some firms treat personalization that way, where it's like, oh, we're going to reap all the benefits out of this and offer you nothing in exchange. And I think customers rightly don't respond well to that.
No, I think that's a good point to end on, mate. Well done. Good. Okay. We look forward to talking to you next week, everybody, and see you then. Thanks very much for listening. Cheers. Thanks very much for listening to the show today. We really hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, it would be really great if you could leave us a review.
This has been The Intuitive Customer with Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton. But it doesn't end here. Just go to beyondphilosophy.com/podcast to find all of our shows, access free tools and resources, and subscribe, won't you? That way you'll never miss a show. That's beyondphilosophy.com/podcasts. We look forward to talking with you next time on The Intuitive Customer.